I am nice and warm. You feel nice and cool.
You're warmer than me.
Good morning. All of the great stories that have moved you, that have captured you, are telling you something about the real story, about the true story into which you've been born, about the romance, the great romance that we've been talking about these past weeks. Helen of Troy must have been really something, right? It's on. Are we on? Can you guys hear me? No. Got no, nothing here. But I'll speak loudly while they figure it out. Think about Helen of Troy, right? I mean, two kingdoms go to war over her, right? Thousands of men give their lives to get her back. Hers was the face that launched 1,000 ships, right? Helen was the wife of Menelaus, king of Greece in the 9th century. And their home was a peaceful Mediterranean kingdom until Paris, prince of Troy, came to visit, and he falls in love with Helen, and depending on the version of the story that you've heard, she with him, right? And under the cover of night, Paris steals Helen away and takes her back to Troy, right? Until Menelaus and his brother Agamemnon amass a mighty Greek army and set off with 1,000 ships to lay siege to Troy, all to get Helen back. Right? Few have felt so pursued. Right? I mean, most of us have wondered if we've even been noticed. Right? Maybe Dad was busy, too busy to come to our games, or maybe he jumped ship altogether. Mom was maybe buried under a pile of one more pile of laundry to do, or maybe she had a career of her own. But as we've been talking about these last couple of weeks, right, we come into the world with some deep longings in our soul, one of which is to be, we have a longing to be special to someone, to be the Helen in some story, or be the Neo in some story, right? And usually, though, early on, we're disappointed. Right? I mean, it is the rare individual who is sought after for who they really are versus what they can do for us. Right? Can you think of a time? Like right now, just try to think of a time when someone significant in your life sat you down with the sole purpose of just knowing your heart more deeply. When was the last time that happened for you? Pretty rare, isn't it? Yeah. And expecting to enjoy what they find there, even more rare, right? More people have climbed Mount Everest, right, than have been deeply pursued. And what are we to conclude? Well, maybe nothing about me is worth knowing, right? That's what I concluded. Standing there with my empty box of ice cream sandwiches that I shared about last week, if you remember the story, right? I was 6 years old and my mom had given me these ice cream sandwiches and to give in exchange for friendship with the neighbor kids, right? And you heard the story last week and you know what you all did? You went, "Aww, poor little Randy." Right? I could see it on your faces. People came up to me and said, "Oh," you know, afterwards. You know, which is very sweet. But it was to make a point, right? Each of us have lived that story in one way or another. Right? Each of us have offered our box of ice cream sandwiches, right? And felt like something about us wasn't wanted, right? One way or another, we have lived that story. We have all lived wanting to be Helen, the object of someone's pursuit, or Neo. You know, there's the scene. I showed the Matrix trailer. If you came in later, you missed it. It was at the beginning. But this will make sense to the guys maybe more. Do you know that scene where the phone rings and Neo picks up the phone? Most of you guys have seen it, right? And Morpheus says, I know you've been searching for me, but what? What does he say next? But I have been searching for you my whole life. And something about that sentence, when Morpheus says it, just grips you. It's like, you've been searching for me, but I've been searching for you all my life. We want that, right? We want someone to pursue us, right? We long for someone to want to find us, and that someone is God. He is our pursuer, right? Can we flip the slide? Oh, and maybe somebody bring up the little clicker for me. Go ahead and flip it again. But the arrows have come. Simone Weil said there are two things that pierce the human heart, beauty and affliction, right? The arrows have come and they've convinced us that God may be pursuing, but he's not really pursuing you. Thank you very much. God may pursue people, but not you. God won't pursue you, or he doesn't pursue you. Or if he does, his pursuit can't satisfy my longings. Is there something in you that believes that sentence? That finding him and joining him somehow just won't quench this thirst that I have? How confident are you that he can quench your thirst? Right? The arrows have come, right? And they've communicated that he can't, he won't, doesn't want to, whatever. And so we find another story to live in to get our longings met. A smaller story, like Randy finds Debbie and ministry, full-time ministry. And they'll fulfill my longings to be the beloved, right? And they're pretty good, right? But it doesn't quite satisfy this ache that seems to come up again and again. You know, even when I coach her to do better. Right? And even when I put in more time and more effort into ministry, right? We live either trying to get someone to pursue us and want us, or we're angry with those closest to us for not coming through for us by pursuing enough. And to make matters worse, God even seems to be working against us. Right? Last week we talked about Lieutenant Dan Taylor. Right? He had a plan for his life, a small story to live in, right? And God comes and thwarts his system to make life work. And God comes and disrupts our small stories, right? And what are we to conclude there? He's against us, right? And like we talked about, we're all convinced that if God would act just a little bit more like those Mesopotamian household gods, you know, where we just do the thing, we just do the, give him what he wants, and then he blesses our story, that life would go so much better. But God seems to be about something else, something more, right? And so it leads us to all these collective conclusions. We get hit with arrows, and to avoid being shot with an arrow ever again, to ever feeling that pain again, we find a safer story to live in, like Jacob in his manipulation, or Jonah in his avoidance and his just staying on his own and not getting involved, or David. We didn't talk about this, but David counted his troops and God judges him. Why? What story? I'm trying to talk with water in my mouth. That's really gross. But what story is David creating with those counting the troops? Is it maybe I'm now a king of a... I'm now the major power in the world story? Or I'm up there in the... You know, now we're a superpower like the United States. That's who we are. That's the identity. And God goes, no. Right? God takes away. And so we go to all these different places when our system doesn't work. You know, we go to victim, which is self-soothing through blame. We talked about self-sabotage, which is about keeping the expectations low. We talked about self-reproach, which works for us because if I'm to blame, at least I have some control. I can change myself. Arranging or controlling, you know, whether it's be nice, be the nicest person anybody ever meets, or be the smartest person, or just be so diligent, work so hard nobody can touch you, or I'll be fragile so everybody walks, you know, on eggshells around me, or I'll be the cynic, I'll just keep a negative outlook so I never have to believe in hope, because then I'd have to engage it, or I'll just hold back, you know, I'll be like Jonah, or I'll step in, I'll just take charge, right? We go to all those things, but underneath all of that is really this deep, deep question. God, do you really care about me? Do you really care about me? The big question today is, why do you have those longings? Why do you have that heart? Why do you have the longing to be pursued? All of that was review from last week. We want to turn now to what we're after this week is, why those desires to be the object of someone's pursuit, to be a part of a critical mission, to be a part of something large, why that heart? Could it be that you have those longings and those desires because that is your role? Could it be that you have that heart to be the focus of someone's deep pursuit, someone's attention? Could that longing be telling you the truth about your role in the story? What if you are Helen in the great story? What if you are Neo in the great story? Most people don't experience their lives as, you know, the focus of some grand pursuit. Do they? Do you experience your life as the focus of some grand pursuit? No, most people don't experience their lives with much clarity at all, right? Most people don't know their role. Most people don't even know what the next turn is. Most people experience their lives more like this clip. I mean, perfectly clear, isn't it? Right? I mean, that's how people experience their lives, right? Seems to be something really important going on. Seems to be good guys, seems to be bad guys. But for the life of me, I have no idea what is going on, really. Right? I mean, we experience our lives with a deep lack of clarity, right? We experience them as a random series of events that we react to. right? A fog, right? Random blows and hassles and deadlines and obligations and small tastes of something more. I mean, we go along, you know. I hear it every week, you know. I just got called into HR. Might be getting laid off, you know. Just had a huge fight with my spouse, right? Oh, but we're building a deck, you know. Kind of excited about that. I just got diagnosed with cancer. I feel like I'm looking down the barrel of a gun, right? We experience our lives as this fog, these random events, and we go, what's going on here, right? We experience our lives like arriving at a movie 45 minutes late. Like a mugging, you know? We need orientation. We need alignment, right? What is your role? What are your lines, right? Are you the star of this story? Are you the best supporting actor, actress, right? Are you an extra? Are you the guy in the red shirt in the Star Trek series? Right? If he gets beamed down, he never comes back. You know, the guy in the red shirt is not coming back. Right? Yeah, what's our role, right? We need to recover the story. We need to recover the gospel, right? We need orientation. Why have I taken the blows that I have? Why has my life gone the way it is? We need to recover the gospel, the story that we're in. We need to go back and remember. Now, the story of the gospel is usually told something like this. You are depraved. I mean, nothing even close to what you should be. You're a royal disappointment. But God, to show what a wonderful guy he is, a great guy he is, and for his own glory, has chosen to save you. He's chosen to come and die on a cross so that he can forgive you of your sins. And you are forgiven now. And so what he wants you to do is kind of mind your manners and be a moral person and do the best you can and try not to screw things up while you wait for him to come back and take you to be with him in the never to the never-ending church service in the sky. Right? And something in us goes, that's the story that we're in? That's what made people rip the roofs off of houses to get next to Jesus? I mean, that doesn't even sound like good news. Yeah, that's not the story. That's not the gospel. It's not even close to good news. No, the story is filled with beauty and romance and love. All those things your heart longs for. And so we want to recover it this morning. And if you have heard this before, I want to ask you just to let your heart take it in through the lens of those longings we've been talking about these last couple of weeks, right? Now, as with all stories, this one begins with the language of story. You know, once upon a time, right? In the beginning. Now, that I'm not talking about Genesis 1, right? That's way into the story. I'm talking about John 1. Right? In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Right? Through Him, all things were made. And without Him, nothing that has been made. Right? Nothing that was made has been made. And check this out. In Him was life. The romance, the beauty, the passion, all those things you want. We found it, John's saying, in Him. And that life was the light of men. John is desperately trying to help us see something about reality of long ago. Something about time before all time. It is desperately important for you to know that something was going on before you came into this story. Something that precedes you, something that is rich and beautiful and true. So that's why it's more important for children to know that their parents love each other than that they love them. Right? Because something in a child's heart needs to know that love is real. That it precedes them and invites them up into it, right? That's what John is trying to get at here. The Word was with God. He's talking about the Trinity. He's talking about the heroic intimacy and fellowship of God. They were tight. I mean, that's the reason we long for close fellowship, friendship with other people. Our family just watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the extended versions. The friendship between Sam and Frodo. I mean, just let your mind go back to that, okay? Right? Think about them. I mean, they are by each other's side every step of the way, right? They're always fighting for each other, always coming through for each other, picking each other up, right? When one's down, right? We want that, don't we? Don't you want that with someone? Yeah, you want that because you're in the image of the Trinity. They've enjoyed that forever, from eternity past. And we remember something. Our hearts remember something of what the Trinity has always enjoyed. Deep communion. Deep friendship. I mean, you have that longing for mission, right? For adventure. You have that longing for a quest where you come through, like in those trailers we saw at the beginning of the hour, right? The Matrix or Troy or Defiance, right? You want that part of it, but to share it. You don't want to go alone, right? We have a longing to connect with at least a few, right? A couple of guys, a couple of gals that you can trust, that you can count on. They can count on you, right? You want that because you're in the image of God. You are like Him. He's always wanted that. And He's always enjoyed that. That's why you long for that. Right? That's how the story begins. The story begins with intimacy and love and connection. And so that's Act 1, is the heroic intimacy and fellowship of God. Act 2, because God is love, and He's the embodiment of love. 1 John says that God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God. Right? I mean, He is the very definition of it. And love is always meant to be shared. It's never meant to just go alone. It's not to be hoarded. That's why young couples want to have children. They want to bring others into the love that they're experiencing, right? I love flying. But I don't want to go alone. I don't fly alone. I mean, almost never. I'll call somebody. I have a much greater joy taking my son flying or my daughter's flying, right? And because of this same thing, because of this kind of love, God decides to create others and bring them into the story He's telling, right? And the first thing He creates is angels, and they look just like this. Or this. Aren't those cute? I mean, they're so sweet. Yeah. No. yeah, Hollywood's depiction is nothing like what you meet when you meet an angel in the Bible. Right? I mean, if you read the Bible, you find they are holy terrors. Right? They are dreadful, powerful creatures, right? The only two angels are sent to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, combined cities of 500,000 people, right? One angel destroys all of the firstborn of Egypt, and four are released according to Revelation in the end, and they will destroy a third of the earth. What are these guys like? I mean, you know, they are not fat little babies shooting arrows, you know, making people fall in love, right? They are mighty, majestic, dreadful beings. Now, let me ask you a question. Why would God fill the stage with what Daniel says is 10,000 times 10,000 Or another way, that's the way the Bible says countless. I mean, we can do the math, right? It's 100 million, right? But 10,000 times 10,000 is the way the Hebrew writers would say innumerable guys who are this powerful. Why would he fill the stage with the equivalent of the Navy SEALs of the universe if he's writing a story about you being a more moral person and minding your manners so that he could take you to be with him in the never-ending church service in the sky? There must be something far more dramatic and dangerous unfolding than we realize. Something happens, though, in Act 2 that you need to understand with greater clarity if you're ever going to understand why your story has unfolded the way it has, why you've taken the blows and the arrows that you have. In Act 2, there's a revolt. There is a coup, a rebellion, a betrayal in heaven. Lucifer, the captain of the guard, the mightiest and most beautiful of all of the angels, right? He no longer wants to be best supporting actor. He wants center stage. He wants the story to be about him. And so he stages a rebellion and he convinces a third of the angelic hosts to rebel against the Trinity. I mean, no one's ever tested God's strength before, right? And so he attempts to seize the throne. What must it have been like? War in heaven. Okay, let me ask you this. Be honest with yourself right now. Do you even conceive of God as being a God who would allow such thing as war in heaven? I mean, isn't heaven supposed to be, you know, some sort of mindless, cloudy bliss where we're all just sort of, you know, floating, and you know what I mean? Like Hollywood portrays. You get a harp, you know, you'll sit on a, right? Isn't that heaven? I mean, it's really captivating. We all want to go there, right? War in heaven suggests that there was choice in heaven. Is heaven going to be a place of choice? There was war there before. Oh no, heaven's going to be... No, it's not that wild. It couldn't be. It has to be like just ephemeral mindlessness. You know what I mean? How do you... What's your perception of reality? There was war in heaven. Same heaven, right? That's going on right now. Take a look with me. Actually, we need... No, we don't. Sorry. We're gonna watch another clip. Let your mind go back. What might it have been like? Okay? Just picture. Close your eyes for a second. You're a bystander watching the war in heaven. What might it have looked like? Let's roll this.
In the land of Mordor, in the fire of Mount Doom, Dark Lord Sauron forged in secret a vast ring to control all others.
I want to check your separate way you sent
it. Oh, thank you.
His malice and his will to dominate all life. One ring to rule them all. One by one, the three lands on the earth fell to the power of the ring. And there were some who resisted. A last alliance of men and elves marched against the armies of Mordor. And on the slopes of Mount Doom, they fought for freedom and their
thank you.
the power of the rainbow could not.
Yeah, this is in your backstory. This is actually in your backstory. This happened. Right? The battle's over, but like in the film, and Tolkien wanted to capture, he's defeated. Satan's defeated, but his spirit remains, right? And he's still loose. Right? And he's cast down. But he's left as a character in the story with a third of countless angelic creatures that are fallen. And where do they reside? Where do they live? Here. Right here. No. Can you tell me why would God send them here and then create us and put us here? What's he thinking? He created us and put us in a world where there's an enemy rooted? Why would he do that? Hold that thought. Let's look here. Revelation 12. There was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back, but he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. Revelation 12, 7 through 9. And then now, if you kind of skip down the end of the chapter, then the dragon was enraged at the woman, and the woman represents the chosen people of God. He went off to do what? Make war against the rest of her offspring and those who obey God's commands and hold to the testimony of Jesus. Okay. Enraged. That's his mood. And what he's up to is making war against you. Right? Why is every story that captures you, that you love, why does it always have a villain? It could be Gladiator with Commodus or Star Wars with the Emperor, right? There's always a villain in the stories that capture you, that hold your attention. Why? Because your story has one. You have a villain in your story. But most of us don't live like that. Most of us, not in the way that we sort of, you know, estimate our lives, not in the way we evaluate, you know, our daily life. It's either I can't get my act together, I just can't seem to, you know, I'm such a bonehead, or why is God doing this to me? Right? The story has a villain. You were born into a world at war. Now the stage is set for Act 3. Genesis 1. Your time in the story, right? And God begins by creating a stunning earth filled with beauty and adventure and risk and danger. I mean, a painter can be known by his paintings, right? Everywhere you look, you see what he's really like. You know, you'd see a shark or a stallion or a crocus flower or a puppy. Right? Or an infant, or a man and woman, right? Is God tame? Is he the nicest guy you'd ever meet? No, but he's something far better. He's good, and he's filled with passion, right? And he creates man and woman living, breathing pictures of himself, right? And pictures of his heart, his soul, and they're naked and they're unashamed, which is a picture of true freedom. They know who they are and they enjoy soul freedom. They have no question about who they are and where they fit, right? And he made us to be his friends and his allies, and he walked with them in the cool of the day, Genesis says. It's all about intimacy and fellowship with God. We're created for it. Also mission with him, right? We're intimate allies born into a world already at war with an enemy already entrenched. So you were made to be his allies in that war. That's why he's given you that heart you've been given, right? That heart to be a part of something big, to come through. Also that heart to be pursued and a part of a critical mission, right? To play a critical role. You've been given that heart because you are the Helen in the story. You are the Neo in the story. That's your part to play. And you're going to need that heart fully alive. Not buried under control or self-sabotage or some kind of arranging. Some sort of small story. You need your whole heart because it's going to take everything you've got to take your role in the story. And what's astounding is he gives us the freedom to reject him. He gives mankind the freedom of choice. Why? Because for love to be real, it has to be chosen. It can never be forced. Right? The guards in a concentration camp can make you do just about anything. They can make you kill your mother. They can make you renounce your God. But one thing they can't do is make you love them. Which is why God is actually quite shy to use his power in Act 3. Right? Because he's looking for love, not control. So he offers us the choice to love him. Right? And Satan knows he can't hurt God. And so like any thug, if a thug can't get at the person he wants to hurt, then he hurts those that they love. Right? And so he goes after Eve. Right? And he plants a seed in Eve's heart. He suggests to her that God is holding out on you. God is keeping things from you. He's withholding. You can't fully trust his heart. If you unpack Genesis 3, that's what it's saying. You can't trust God's heart. He's ultimately restrictive, even though he's given you all of this beauty and wonder and freedom, naked and unashamed. You can't have that one piece of fruit. So God's ultimately restrictive, right? Which is what the world is bought into, right? Our world believes God is way more about no than he's about yes. Doesn't the world? Right? We've bought that lie. And he convinces her of that, right? And that life is not found in intimacy and ally with God, but in a life you can arrange. And so she goes, yes, that's true. And believing the lie, right? Intimacy with God is thwarted. Mankind is now on its own. The world is no longer God's possession. He had given it to us, right? As a wedding present on our wedding day, basically. And in our agreement with Satan, we gave the world over to Satan. That's why 1 John says, we know that we're children of God, but we also know that this world is under the control of the evil one. That's why Satan had, in the temptation in Matthew 4, was offered it to Jesus. I'll give you the world if you worship me. Because it was his to give. And so, I mean, if you think about that, we know it, don't we? We know this world's under the control of the evil one, don't we? Have you read history? Have you watched the evening news? I mean, we know it. This is not our Father's world, right? And that's why your life has unfolded the way it has. That's why you've taken the arrows that you've taken. Your enemy hates you. I was praying about this week, and I was just, Lord, what do you want to say about this the large story and what's going on in our hearts. And this is what he said to me. This is right out of my journal. He said this. I feel like this is what the Lord was speaking to me. Randy, the darkness in this world has a sinister drive. Your hearts and your glory and your connection with me have always been the battleground. It is very general and it is very individual. You have been hated much more. You've been hated, but much more your heart, your glory, and your intimacy with me has been hated. What you need to understand more than any other thing when it comes to the wounds that you've received, Randy, is that you are hated. The inner you, the part that I have tried to romance all your life, is hated, and I'm hated. He wants to keep us apart, and he knows how if you allow it. Self-doubts, doubting my heart, doubting my goodness and my guidance have permeated every heart. That is why I made the hunger so strong. Without it, you'd never find me. I really don't ask that you refrain from being satisfied by things here. I just want you to enjoy them with me. I also want you to help others find me. Do not portray me, as you're speaking about this, as an adversary, but do portray me as jealous for your heart. So I felt like that was the Lord speaking to me. So I wrote it down, and you can weigh that yourself if you think it is or not. But the ship goes down, right? It's the Titanic. You know, it goes down. And, you know, we're sort of left in lifeboats sort of to survive in this world. But before the curtain closes on the garden, God promises a rescue. He says, I will come for you. And you see it unfold all through the Old Testament. He comes after Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and then he comes for Moses and he rescues his people. And if you noticed, if you read the Old Testament, it's battle after battle after battle. You might have saw those first opening clips and gone, wow, there's a lot of guns. Yes. It's battle after battle after battle all through the Old Testament. He is the God at war. And he's fighting for our hearts. He comes to rescue his people. It's battle to get the promised land. Then it's battle to keep the promised land. And then Jesus is coming as a baby, is portrayed in Revelation 12 as this great war. Right? And then all the babies in Bethlehem are killed. And then he's tortured and he's killed. Right? And finally, the showdown with Satan over us, over you. God's goal to win us back, to pay our ransom price, to set you free so you can walk with him again. Let's look at this clip. This is our Jesus. This is what he did for us. This is our God's heart.
So, the end of the free people.
It's just let it go. Just let it go. The gospel says that you are God's beloved. That you have created a cosmic crisis. It says that you were stolen from your true love, and he has launched the greatest campaign in history to get you back. God created you for intimacy with him, and when we turned our backs on him, he came for us. He sent flowers and notes in the form of the romance throughout our lives, and he's used beauty and affliction to capture our hearts. And after all else failed, he conceived the most daring of plans. Under the cover of night, he stole into the enemy's camp incognito. The Ancient of Days, disguised as a newborn. The Incarnation, to fight for and purchase us back, to give his life to get us back, to get you back. Why? Because he is after you, your heart, that part of you that you've killed, that part of you that you've locked away in a small story, the part of you that you're afraid of letting out, your laughter, your tears, your dreams, your fears, your heart of hearts. You are his beloved. That's the story of Christianity. That's the invitation of the gospel. It is a story filled with passion and adventure and romance, right? And what is coming is Act 4, right? The great restoration. All things restored. All the great hearts are back. Reconnected. And that's going to be another message sometime here. But how do we respond to this? Greg's going to come up and the team's going to come up right now and lead us in worship of him. And so let's go to prayer as they come up and just turn our hearts to the Lord. Jesus, we recognize that we might be more than we thought. We might be more important to you than we realized. We might have a much larger role to play in the story that you're writing than we ever imagined. And Lord, we're afraid of that. It's so much easier, so much safer to play a small side role in the story than to be the object of your love and pursuit. But, Lord, take our place in that. We take our place. Lord, I take my place as the object of your love and your invitation to join you in this great war. Lord, you know what you're doing. And Lord, as I evaluate all the arrows and the different things that I've experienced throughout my life, I understand now that I'm a part of a very large story. And I haven't had clarity on why, but now I understand. Now I see. There's a battle going on, and the battle's over me. The battle's over my heart being alive or dead. And Lord, I invite you to awaken my heart fully. I turn back to you.